Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm in Fairland in Johannesburg today at the offices of MTN South Africa to talk to Giovanni Chiarelli. Now, that's a really nice Italian name. Giovanni is MTN South Africa's Chief Technology and Information Officer. He's been in the role for about 6 months now. And we're going to talk today about those billions and billions of rand that the company is pouring into its network. It has invested, by my calculations, north of 20 billion rand in the past 2 years alone. Why is it investing so much, and what does it mean for users of MTN's network? Giovanni, thank you for joining us on Tech Central.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast. You are talking about big numbers, yeah? So it's true. MTN South Africa has invested around 20 billion rand in the last 2 years. And by the way, this year is also investing another 10 million rand in the network. Yeah,
that's huge investment. That's massive investment. And I want to get to that. I want to talk in detail about that investment, where that money specifically is going. But Giovanni, it's the first time you and I have met. I think many listeners to this podcast will be being introduced to you, if you like, for the first time. Tell me a bit about your background. I had a brief look at your LinkedIn profile this morning. You're formerly with Vodafone. You worked in some Vodafone operations in Europe, and before that, you were also a chief information officer for Telecom Italia. Is your career always been in telecommunications?
No, in reality, I started in the banking industry, obviously in the IT department of a big bank, European bank. The name is UniCredit. So they started from Italy and they expanded significantly in the early 90s in the rest of Europe. And after 6 years, then I moved to consulting. Mm-hmm. I supposed to be deployed to the banking industry as a consultant, but vice versa, telecommunications was really booming in Europe at that time. And so between one day and the next, I was moved to telecommunications. Okay. So I started supporting the startup of the challenging operators in the Italian market with Anderson Consulting. And then I joined the first time one operator, and I started working in network and IT in different roles.
Okay, and you've been there ever since.
Yeah, and then I joined Telecom Italia. As you mentioned, I was the CIO of the company for 3 years, and then Vodafone Group knocked on my door, and I started working with them in a more international environment. And I have spent the last 4 years running technology in Vodafone Romania. So similar role to the current role in MTN South Africa, yeah, but obviously smaller scale compared to South Africa.
Sure, sure. And how did the South African opportunity come about? Were you looking to move here, or were you headhunted? How did you end up coming all the way down to South Africa?
Yeah, it was, let me say, as usual, the telco community at the end of the day is quite small.
Okay.
So Babak Fuladi was moving here as a group CTIO.
Yes.
And so he highlighted the opportunity here in South Africa, and we started.
So Babak knew you already?
Yeah, okay. I was his successor in Romania, by the way.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and previously we worked together in Vodafone Group in different roles. So at the end of the day, he presented me to the CEO, mm-hmm, and he presented me to the group HR director, and we started the interview processes, and we liked each other. So at the end of the day, I landed here 6 months ago.
Okay, great. So you've inherited this large network that MTN operates here in South Africa, the huge investment happening under your watch and under your predecessor's watch. Huge amounts of money. You're investing at the same level as, if not more than your main competitor in this market, and your main competitor in this market is slightly larger than you. What was the thinking behind all this investment? Is there a bit of catch up that's happening here? Did you underinvest in previous years, or is this a strategic decision to try and beat the number one player in this market with a more robust network?
Yeah. So as you can imagine, is at the end of the day the sum of different factors.
Okay.
It's true that probably in the early years in let me say 2010 and following years, we were not investing so much. Mm. So this is one element. So we needed to catch up with the industry and the main competitor, especially. On the other side, we believe that strong service has to come from a strong network. So the network is always the first and the most frequent touch point for our customers. So at the end of the day, if we want to have the customer experience as our polar star, it means, first of all, the first touch point from our customers has to be good or very good. Mm. Yeah. So we realized that between 2015 and 16, the situation was not optimal. And that was the reason why there was a clear agreement starting from the shareholders to invest significantly in the network. So this year, we are in the third year of this very intense program. As we said before, is around 10 billion rand each year, which is massive. As you said, we are investing more than our competitor. Data are public, so we know. Yes. In these years, we are investing each year around between 2 and 3 billion more than the main competitor in the country. And this is public, yeah? But this is exactly the testament of what we want to do and what we want to achieve. So network excellence is a key element in the customer experience. And in order to achieve it, you need significant investments. It cannot be done just with small tunings, and especially in a situation in which LTE is becoming predominant, obviously you need to invest in LTE. You need to invest in fiber to the sites, because just through that you can also guarantee a sustainable path to 5G and so on and so forth.
Okay. So you made these big investments. I remember speaking to the former CEO of MTN South Africa, I think it was early last year, and he said that the focus initially was going to be on 8 cities, improving quality in those cities and measuring those against the competitor and ensuring that the services were superior. What have you done so far? Where is this investment? You're on year three of this major investment. Where is the money going specifically? Where are you investing most of it? Are you focusing mainly on the cities, or has that now expanded into other parts of the country?
Yeah, obviously, at the beginning, we focused mostly in the most dense areas, as you can imagine. So, and now, after 1 year and a half of intense work, we can say we have the best network in Cape Town, the best network in Durban, the best network in Pretoria.
How do you define that?
Already. So it's an external benchmark. So we hire, obviously, an independent company in order to test the network. By the way, the company is P3, so they are doing it for many operators across the globe and also for our competitors, for what we have understood. So their methodology is very clear. And it's also helping us to tune even better and even more the network. So it's not just a matter of saying, okay, we are the best. But in reality, every time we are going through those campaigns, we have a huge amount of data that can help us to understand what is really the customer experience, because they are proving with commercial devices, doing hundreds or thousands of tests. So it's really the end-to-end experience that we can prove. Definitely on a daily basis, we have, as you can imagine, KPIs, counters coming from the network, but this is always a partial view because the devices are also an important element in the game. And so in order to prove exactly the end-to-end, you need to go through those massive tests in a constant, search for the details and for the quality. Mm. Yeah.
So what are some of the metrics that you use to determine quality? I would imagine the speed of the network is critically important. Latency, drop calls. What are some of those metrics?
So it's let me say first of all the basics are related to network availability. Yeah, so there is no customer experience if the network is not available.
Yeah,
or in any case the customer experience is degraded if you have not all the cells up in a certain area. So that's the basics. Yeah. On top of that, obviously, you measure voice and data experience. And even in a digital world, at the end of the day, very often, the experience is determined, at least the feedback from the customers is going that direction. The experience is still determined from the voice. Yeah. So even you maybe have fantastic performance in terms of data services, but the voice is not okay, the overall perception even of the most sophisticated customers is not a good network in any case. So voice has to be very good, and the voice can be measured through drop call ratio, the accessibility of the network, because another element is that when I'm dialing, if I'm not hearing the tone, obviously this is something that has to be measured. And the quality of the speech, the quality of the voice is another element in the equation. So these are the three main elements for the voice experience. On top of that, especially when you have LTE, is also the setup time of the call. So between the moment in which you dial and you heard the tone. And then the rest is mostly related to data. And to data, you start again from the basics, in which is the speed, the throughput in downlink and in uplink. Yeah, definitely still is mostly downlink. But due to the social networks, upload is becoming more and more important as well. So is now a balance between a download and upload experience, so the speed of the network. And then on top of that, again, the experience in terms of navigation. So what is the response time in terms of seconds from the usual most popular sites or apps? And then on top of that, you go to the streaming experience, where again is a mix of response time. So when you start to see the first frames of the movie, or of the video clip, but also on the other side, obviously, any buffering, non-buffering, and so on and so forth. So this is a set of KPIs, which is around another 10 indicators that at macro level are telling you is going well or not. Behind, you were mentioning before latency, definitely this is something behind the scene, but very important. At the end of the day, many of these KPIs affecting customer experience are determined from the latency, which is exactly the response time that you are demanding on the single transactions or connections that you establish with the network.
So independent research is saying that you're ahead of your main rival in some of the key cities. Those are Durban, Cape Town?
Pretoria.
And Pretoria.
Yeah.
Okay. What's happening with the other metros?
So on the other metros, there is a work ongoing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in Joburg, there is a very, very intense work in all the area, because our aim is obviously to achieve the same results this year.
Yes.
But then we are applying the same methodology to the next layers in terms of urban areas. So we have a very intense work in all the cities in terms of population, up to the 50 major areas. Then we are starting to prepare the next plan that is between 50 and 200. And in parallel, we work on the other areas, so rural areas and even ultra rural areas as well. So there is always a balance in terms of investments between urban and non-urban, because obviously we have also many customers in non-urban areas. And there the focus is, first of all, to provide data connectivity, and then to improve again the speed and so on and so forth.
Just talking a bit about the rural connectivity, I've amazed actually. I use a range of networks, so I can see what the, you know, what the coverage is like, and I'm amazed when I go into rural areas now where either there was no signal before, or it was a simple 2G or edge GPRS or edge connection, and many rural areas like rural KwaZulu-Natal is now well covered by 3G technology, and you can get a pretty decent connection just about anywhere now. Is 3G pretty much universal in South Africa now? Is 3G available pretty much where 2G used to be available?
Yeah, in terms of population coverage, we can say almost there.
Yeah.
Definitely 3G has an advantage today compared to LTE in those areas due to the spectrum availability.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's the reason why we are deploying the so-called UMTS 900, which has very good penetration, very good coverage also in the rural areas. It's a more efficient way to provide data connectivity. Unfortunately, today there is no band, similar band available for LTE. Mm. In many other countries there, but here is not yet. And so in this case, the effort on LTE should be very, very expensive in terms of rollout. So we prefer to wait and see when the proper band will be available in order to push in the same areas 4G or
LTE. That's the digital dividend bands below 800, around
exactly.
800 megahertz.
So we are talking about the bands in general below 1 gigahertz. And specifically for LTE is 800 and 700 megahertz that today is not available. My previous experience was vice versa in a market in which that band was available, and exactly both in terms of deep indoor coverage in the urban areas, but then also in rural and deep rural, it was a fantastic tool exactly to fix and to bypass the digital dividend.
Yes, and I mean there's a lot of pressure in South Africa to bridge the so-called digital divide. I'd imagine that your experience is showing you that with access to that digital dividend spectrum, where the TV broadcasters are still using those bands for analog broadcasting, that once you get access to those, you're going to be able to provide the sort of mobile wireless broadband services that we used to hear in the cities over long distances in rural areas.
Yes, so I can give you my previous experience.
Please do.
So
let
me say it's related to Eastern Europe. In that case, when there was the spectrum auction for LTE, the regulator established that the winners in terms of spectrum allocation had an obligation to cover disadvantaged areas. Mm. So the three main operators were able to access to new spectrum in 800 in this case, and there was an obligation for them to split the disadvantaged areas in three main portions, and in the next 3 years to deploy data connectivity in those areas. And many of them previously had not even any 2G mobile. So it was 2G, 3G, and in some cases obviously LTE as well. That was the mandate in order to close the gap on the digital dividend.
Given how much 3G coverage you've rolled out now, given that there's 3G coverage not just in the cities, but well, the cities are more, you know, tend to more towards LTE type devices, I guess, and more so as the years go on. But in the rural areas where you've deployed 3G, can we start having a conversation in South Africa about operators like MTN potentially switching off their 2G networks at some point? Or are there too many 2G devices?
I think 2G is still predominant in the network. Yeah, mm-hmm. You see today that the balance in terms of voice traffic, for example, between 2G, 3G, we are getting to a situation now of 50-50 between the two. Yeah. By the way, I have a personal view. So obviously, everybody is aware of what is happening in the US. They decided to switch off the 2G. Frankly speaking, from my perspective, I am keener to consider switch off of 3G.
Oh?
Yeah. So once you have 4G the below 1 giga spectrum, yeah?
Yeah.
4G is becoming by far more efficient than 3G, yeah? And at the end of the day, probably it's better to move all the data services and the customers using data services from 3G to 4G, but to keep 2G for obviously voice and all the telemetry, emergency services, and so on and so forth, that is becoming more and more difficult, vice versa, to migrate to 3G. So in essence, if you look at 3G, starting from the standards, is less efficient than 4G. So the cost of carrying on 1 megabyte of traffic in 3G is much higher than 4G.
Interesting.
So in theory, I should prefer to move as much as possible all the customers using data from 3G to 4G and to keep 2G at the minimum for the voice and emergency services and the telemetry, but not switching it out. So I think we know what is happening in US. I am expecting vice versa, for example, a different approach in Europe.
Mm.
Yeah, in Europe, the debate is very, let me say, intense, but I am not convinced that big players will switch off easily 2G for the same reasons.
Interesting. Interesting. There's still a lot of 2G devices in the network,
Absolutely.
As you mentioned. I suppose the challenge of doing something like of considering a 3G switch off would be that 4G handsets are still quite a lot pricier than 3G handsets, and so you've got that at the low end of the market. I suppose there's an affordability issue. If you say suddenly, if you want to be able to connect to the mobile broadband network, you're going to have to own an LTE ready device. Whereas at the moment, I guess a lot of people who want to get a network connectivity or access to the internet could consider a 3G device, which is cheaper. Is that a consideration?
Yeah. So, but I think the gap between the two, however, is closing. So in terms of cost of the devices, I'm expecting that
in the next few years.
Will close.
Yeah.
And then you see now, obviously, also the biggest markets in terms of population, significant adoption of LTE devices, China and India obviously are driving.
Mm.
So this is lowering the cost of the LTE devices. So I'm expecting that, as I said before, the differential between the two will be lower, and vice versa, there is, however, a cost opportunity in terms of moving traffic to 4G in terms of efficiency of the network. So probably the two things will be balanced, and at that moment it would be easy to migrate to 4G LTE the data traffic.
Okay. Where are we at the moment with voice over LTE? Has MTN deployed that on its network?
So we have not deployed it. Personally, I believe that without the 800 MHz or 700 MHz, is not very effective.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, you miss indoor penetration, for example.
Mm.
So the customer experience is not very good in that case. Once we have the 800 MHz layer, it can be deployed. The core network is ready.
Mm-hmm.
We have tested it, it's working. But again, if we consider customer experience as the main driver, today we said, let's pause it until we have all the right conditions to do that.
Right. Yeah? So actually, if you switched on voice over LTE, a customer with a voice over LTE capable handset could end up having a worse experience because it's defaulting to the higher frequency.
It depends in the many European markets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember very well, because I was in that situation, in that debate.
Yeah.
In those markets in which, for example, there was not LTE 800 and they switched on voice over LTE, Italy, for example, at the beginning, it was bad experience.
Mm.
So vice versa, those markets in which the LTE 800 or 700 was deployed, the customer experience was good.
Mm.
So
it's
a simple problem related to coverage, especially in indoor. So definitely LTE 1800. Is not so good, especially in deep indoor when you have two walls and so on and so forth. So you need a lower band.
The fact that you haven't been issued with any new spectrum for a long time, the fact that you've been saying for years that you need access to new spectrum, particularly the 2.6 gigahertz band and then the digital dividend bands. Is this affecting you in a meaningful way yet? I mean, are you having to, for example, densify your network? Is some of this 10 billion rand plus that you're spending every year the result of the fact that you haven't got more spectrum and then you're having to build more base stations to compensate for that?
Yeah, sure. Let me say, I'm starting from my first impression when I came. And as usual, there is not a second chance for a first good impression. Yes, it's something that is remaining in your mind for long. And obviously, in the first few days, I was discussing with all the colleagues in a sort of very, very quick induction.
Yes. Yeah?
And obviously, it appeared the diagram of the spectrum allocation in the mobile. And I said, okay, guys, fantastic. This is 2G, 3G, show me the allocation for LTE. I said, no, it's the same page. Yeah, so that was the first reaction. Obviously, I didn't count that I was coming from a country in which, vice versa, for other reasons, there was a lot of spectrum availability. And then I started asking, what are you doing, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It's really a game of inches in this case. So is a very surgical approach, trying to balance between all the different needs, and the needs, as usual, are coming from the customers and the device adoption, keeping in a typical 2G, 3G spectrum allocation, the three bands, 2G, 3G, and LTE. Mm. And as you said, then we miss also some big components that are making the LTE adoption, unfortunately, lower than the potential of the market. Yeah. Mm. So 1800 today is prevalent for the LTE. Then 2100 sometime can be used, but again, due to the 3G predominance, not always, and so on and so forth. So is really trying to customize and tailor it in terms of spectrum strategy, area by area, looking at the customers, looking at the devices, and so on and so forth, which is a constant work, but it cannot last for long. So there will be a moment in which we will touch the ceiling, and the network densification will be really, really tough, because at the end of the day, the only plan B that you can build is to create a more dense grid. But as you can imagine, today our network is already above 10,000 sites in total.
Yes.
So 1 month ago, we have passed the mark of 10,000 sites. It's a huge network. Mm. Yeah. 1 month ago, we also passed the mark of the 6,000 LTE sites. It's becoming very, very onerous.
Mm.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you say, I could do better investments.
Mm.
Yeah.
So when do you hit that spectrum crunch? How far away is it?
I prefer not to reveal it, because okay. as you can imagine, is related also to some quite confidential analysis that
sure.
we are doing. So what we can see is that today is not yet there.
Yeah.
But we are starting to see the ceiling quite close. So it means that from this perspective, there are some urgent actions that should be taken. Otherwise, it means that we need to build hundreds and hundreds of sites just for that reason.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So let's come back to the CapEx investment that you're making. Let's talk about mobile specifically, the carrier technologies. I presume the bulk of your investment there in last mile wireless is going to LTE.
Yeah, it's going prevalently to LTE, and then it's going to 3G. You could say, okay, I see still investment in 2G.
Yeah.
Definitely, because when we build a new site, we implement all the three technologies. So by default, we also deploy 2G. That's the reason why there is a significant investment in 2G, but in proportion less compared to the other technologies. Plus, obviously, the rural and ultra-rural, in which today usually we are not deploying LTE and we are deploying 2G and 3G.
What about other wireless access technologies? I know that MTN has been doing some testing around using unlicensed spectrum to perhaps offset some of the challenges you're facing with the spectrum crunch. And I know you recently ran a pilot, I think, at a shopping center in Pretoria, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Just tell us a bit about what you're doing in that area and whether we can expect a wider commercial rollout at some point.
Yeah. So what we have done is a pilot on LTE LAA, so the assisted access. It was very interesting and is working very well. So in this case, the idea is that you aggregate the traditional LTE spectrum with the 5 GHz spectrum, which is typical today of Wi-Fi. And by the way, we wanted also to see if there was any problem in coordination between the two different technologies. And what we have found is that there is no problem. So the technology is working very well from this perspective. Clearly, the only question mark now is about an adoption from the market and the large-scale deployment. As you know, 5 GHz, again, is not a good band in terms of coverage. So it could be done in very dense areas, in indoor public areas as well. That's for sure a clear application, but it will not help us going back to the point of the digital divide.
Why 5 GHz is a matter of interest and not 2.4?
No, obviously there are, let me say, 5, 2.4, and so on and so forth. We have used the 5
For
our tests.
Are there actual handsets in the market that can take advantage of this technology?
Not for the moment.
Not yet.
Yeah, but they are announced, so the chipsets now are almost coming to the market.
Yeah.
So we are expecting that in the next 12 months, you will have also devices capable to address that band.
And what about Wi-Fi handoff? Is that something that MTN is investigating? Is it something that can be practically implemented in this market?
So you mean
So handing off from the mobile network onto Wi-Fi?
Voice over Wi-Fi, in essence. Yeah, so our core network is already ready. We have done tests and so on and so forth. We have run pilots. We have also run pilots, for example, in roaming scenarios and so on and so forth. So it's working. Now we need to see from a commercial point of view how do we want to develop the topic, but definitely is a good topic. Again, as I told you before, we don't see the need in terms of offloading capacity. Yeah, at the moment. In the future, it could be. But we see vice versa, maybe some more sophisticated customers that they prefer these compared to other, let me say, applications. Yeah.
Okay. Let's chat about fiber. You mentioned a bit earlier in our discussion that you're deploying fiber to your own high sites, your own base stations. How far are you into that project? How many of your own base stations do you still need to wire up? Do you want to do them all eventually, or is there a certain portion that makes sense? And then also, what are your investment plans over the coming years for fiber to the home? Everyone's talking about fiber to the home. You're traditionally a mobile operator. How much of a fixed line, last mile fixed line operator do you want to be in the future?
Yeah. So, on one side, talking about the fiber to the site for the mobile technology, this is becoming crucial. Yeah, at the end of the day, you can have the best radio technology, but if you have not backhauling with fiber, it will be a huge bottleneck. Yeah, even if in microwaves there are new technologies, more performing, and so on and so forth, but it will be not enough. So I think we are in a quite privileged position in the market. Today, if we look at urban areas, more than 75% of our sites have already the fiber connectivity. And then it will be, again, a matter of capacity to increase the rest. So that is giving me the confidence that also our investments are future-proof. And especially if you are thinking about 5G, there is no way for 5G to work with a microwave backhauling. You
yes.
need to have fiber to the site. That's crucial. So from this perspective, we see already the benefits. because definitely the latency in our network is very good and is due to the predominance of the fiber in terms of backhauling in the urban areas. And then it will sustain the data growth that we are expecting. Looking at the fiber to the home, definitely there are many studies and many analyses. We did a quite bold step acquiring Smart Village, which is a clear sign that this is an area that we want to develop. And we want to be consistent in a sort of convergent agenda, both for consumer and enterprise companies. So we believe that the market is starting answering well, but obviously we need also to consider what is coming between 2018 and 2019 from this demand.
Okay. So, I mean, just in that fiber space, your main competitor is saying they want to work with another player in the market because of the high costs of doing the sort of deployment. What is your thinking around the costs of actually doing FTTH in South Africa and the returns around it? And, what is the business case? Do you need to work with other players in the market to deploy this infrastructure? Do you take a go-it-alone attitude? What's the... How is this going to unfold in the coming years?
So I think that from this perspective, South Africa is not dissimilar from other markets.
Sure.
So at the end of the day, in other markets in which probably this journey has started in the last few years, you see really that, either there is a full open access approach, and by the way, in South Africa is that, or there are, let me say, joint ventures or different ways of creating a critical mass in order to deploy the infrastructure. Usually the incumbent is also playing an important role in this discussion, because usually the incumbent has ducts that can be reused and can reduce significantly the cost of deploying and passing houses and so on and so forth. So all these ingredients are part of what we can see in other markets that probably are a couple of years ahead of South Africa. It's clear that today there is quite a proliferation of companies deploying fiber. And I think probably a consolidation will happen quite soon.
Okay. Let's come back to wireless technology. We've spoken about 2G, 3G, and 4G LTE, but what's coming next in that evolution? We hear terms like LTE Advanced, 4G Plus. Are we going to see those technologies deployed on the MTN network, or is this going to be another issue about spectrum?
No, for example, if you start from 4G Plus, we didn't, let me say, talk loudly about this topic, but in reality we are already deploying what is in other countries considered 4.5, 4 plus, and so on and so forth. So
this is LTE Advanced.
This is LTE Advanced, 4x4 MIMO, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So we have already a few hundred of sites in our network capable.
Okay.
We are doing that because we see the need. In terms of customer experience, there are devices that even if they don't support 4x4, if they support 2x2, they get some benefit. Mm-hmm. There is some benefit also in terms of increased coverage from a site which is 4x4 MIMO instead of 2x2. And then the newest high-end phones are supporting 4x4, so the throughput, the speed, the experience in terms of data navigation and streaming is becoming even better. So I think it will go on significantly. Today we don't want to market in a different way. I have seen other markets also in my home country. There is one big operator who is announcing 4.5G. Mm-hmm. A very, very big campaign in terms of communication. It has to be considered that it's an approach in other markets, vice versa, is not so, evident. other markets, for example, when carrier aggregation started in LTE, so aggregating two bands, they started to again communicate 4G plus and so on and so forth. We didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really dependent from what is the market, what are the customers thinking, and if it's relevant for them or not.
I saw an article the other day. I had a good laugh. I think it was in the US, where one of the operators has deployed LTE Advanced and is calling it 5G, and it's created quite a storm.
I think exactly. It will. The risk is that we burn the 5G. Let me say name. Mm. I think something happened here in South Africa a few years ago with 4G, that somebody tried to push 4G a little bit.
Cell C, indeed.
Yeah. And now we are talking about LTE, because otherwise 4G can be misunderstood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that 4G will not happen the same.
So 5G technology, what is it exactly? How is it different to the LTE networks that we have today? And when are we likely to see it being introduced in South Africa? And what's it going to mean for consumers?
Yeah, so I think we were touching before one of the elements, which is throughput. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the ambition of the mobile technology to bypass the limit of 1 gigabyte per second. Yeah, which is almost creating a perception very similar to the fiber, with a very low latency, which means there is no barrier in terms of applications to be with the mobile last mile. Mm. I'm expecting that at that time, Wi-Fi will be really obsolete and Wi-Fi will be phased off from the market. Yeah, in reality, 4G or LTE could already play the role, but 5G definitely will kick out Wi-Fi from the scene. So that's 5G in essence. In terms of when, in many markets, the 2020 is the date in which there will be the first, let me say, significant rollout. As usual, Korea is always ahead in the last few years, and then Japan. So they said that the next let me say big events in the country, they will have 5G already available. Probably it will be just in limited areas in the urban areas, but this is the way in which LTE was also deployed. So usually Korea is a couple of years ahead of anybody else, and then US and Europe. In Europe, the date is around 2020.
Just technologically, what's involved in 5G? Are we talking about advances in technology that make much better use of the same bit of free radio frequency spectrum to deliver a much better throughput? Or are we talking about technologies that take advantage of more licensed spectrum to deliver those sort of gigabit and beyond speeds that they're talking about?
So from this perspective, is quite similar for 4G and 5G. Yeah. So at the end of the day, you look always as below 1 giga band, which is the layer coverage. And then you go for a 2 or 3 gigahertz band, which is capacity. Yeah, in this case, the industry is considering the coverage layer predominantly 700, and vice versa, the capacity layer for the moment predominantly 3.5. So. That's the tendency, yeah.
Okay.
Like in LTE was and is 800 for the coverage layer when available, and then 18 and 2.6, vice versa for the capacity.
So 5G will require a whole new set of licensing by regulators,
or at least spectrum availability.
Yeah. So the 800 will be predominantly used for 4G with 2.6 gigahertz. Coupled with the 2.6 gigahertz band, and then 5G will be predominantly 700 megahertz coupled with 3.5 gigahertz?
We need to see, because again, it's too early. In reality, LTE could be licensed also in 700, and then there will be, let me say, again, a problem of allocating 4G and 5G in the same band. We will see. Yeah. I think on the other side, 3.5 today is mostly used for wireless routers and fixed mobile substitution. Or there is still maybe the old WiMAX deployed in that area. But again, WiMAX is phasing off. So it will be, let me say, available by 2019, 2020, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I think the 3.5 gigahertz band here in South Africa is largely unused, actually.
Yeah.
And at the 2.6 gigahertz band, I think that's true as well. That's also waiting to be licensed.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting stuff. In terms of densification of your network, I know you've invested a lot in new types of base station. And I know I drive around the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, I see these lampposts on many street corners now. I know those are predominantly, if not all, MTN towers that have been put up. Why did you go that particular route?
So definitely you are using that to be less invasive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In areas in which you are not able to find any macro solution or any rooftop.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's the main reason.
And it's fill-in coverage, is it?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, is a site that provides you 2G, 3G, 4G.
Yeah.
So then you have also lighter solutions that are the so-called flagpoles.
Yeah.
Vice versa, in this case, you have just two technologies. Yeah.
Mm.
And usually you do that in order to densify a little bit in terms of capacity for data and so on and so forth. But here they are not so popular.
Mm.
Yeah. So as you pointed out, lamp poles are, in terms of technology, equivalent to a standard macro site.
Right.
Just simply in a smaller scale. Obviously, they are not so tall. So in terms of
limited
broad coverage you have less. So it's more a hotspot in terms of coverage. Yeah.
I was intrigued. There's one particular street in Bryanston that I often drive down, and there are three lampposts in a row. Why would you do that?
So in this case, it's exactly capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have high usage in that area, and you need to do that. Generally speaking, if you consider the ratio between one rooftop and the equivalent of lamp poles, for example, the equivalent is three lamp poles for one rooftop, or maybe sometime even four lamp poles for a tower compared to a tower. So it's quite onerous, and we are trying to do that in any case to improve customer experience, especially in areas in which it's impossible to build a macro solution.
Giovanni Chiarelli is Chief Technology and Information Officer at MTN South Africa. Thanks so much for talking to us today. This has been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you very much. It has been really, really interesting to discuss with you.